Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Powered by Righteous Media.
Welcome to Independent Americans. Welcome to episode 275. I'm your host, Paul Rykoff. It's finally baseball season. It's Final Four season. It's almost Masters season. And it's always chaos season. But it's also always helper season. Now, especially, is it time to stay vigilant.
We are moving at full speed on a number of key priorities, and I've issued four directives to this team. The first, we need to continue to focus on recovery because it is our obligation to bring a sense of closure to these families. The second, we need to clear the channel and open vessel traffic to the port because the health of the Maryland economy and the national economy depends on it. Third, we need to take care of all the people who have been affected by this crisis. And that means the families, that means the workers, that means the businesses, that means the first responders, that means everybody. And fourth, we need to rebuild the Francis Scott Key Bridge.
That's Maryland Governor Wes Moore, a good friend of mine and someone you've heard on this podcast multiple times. If you've never heard or seen those episodes, especially now, I recommend you go back and check them out. Wes Moore is what it looks like when a leader has clear goals and a real strategy. Our generation of veteran leaders learned how to do it in the military. And now, many are applying it in politics. None better than my friend, Governor Wes Moore. When I say look for the helpers, he's exemplifying what I mean. And even more so, he's highlighting the other helpers that exemplify what I mean. The first responders, the construction workers, the teachers, the people who are running in when others are running out. In this season, there's no shortage of events unfolding that have some running in and others running out. Last episode, I went deep with the great American filmmaker and historian and conscience for America, Ken Burns. If you haven't heard it, go back and check it out. But he sounded the alarm about the chaos that our country and our world is facing. And since I recorded that episode, a number of things have happened that should demand your attention, including significant attacks in a Moscow theater. ISIS-K claimed responsibility. But I wanted to underscore something else. For years on this show now, we've highlighted the urgency and the importance of supporting Ukraine and how we need to run in while so many others are running out. This attack in Moscow that became a blip in the American media was very, very important. Because I think it's amazing, after all these years of war and carnage, and a testament to the restraint and discipline of the Ukrainian people, that attacks like that haven't happened caused by Ukraine. If faced with an invasion and the same threat of annihilation, most other nations would be regularly attacking targets inside Russia for years now. See Israel and America for recent examples over the last couple decades. But this is one of the many news items this season that you won't see much about. And we're going to try to bring it to you here on this show and at least bring some light to contrast the heat. Because the news media, especially the cable news media, is full of heat and nonsense during this season especially. So hopefully you missed it. But if you didn't, for a couple of days last week, the entire cable news spectrum was obsessed with the fact that former GOP leader Ronna McDaniel was fired from a job she was initially offered at NBC News. Now, why do I mention this? Because the whole Ronna McDaniel thing yet again reveals that there's nothing the American corporate cable news media loves more than a story about itself. It's the great self-licking ice cream cone. And too often, the cable news media is covering itself or drama instead of Gaza, Ukraine, or the most important stuff impacting you, me, and our families. So, yes, it's the season of baseball. Yes, it's soon going to be the season of playoff basketball. Yes, it's the spring season. And yes, it's going to be the election season. But it's also going to be a season of something else, especially on this show. This season, and maybe this year, it's going to be the season of hell to the nah.
Hell to the nah, to the nah, 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 nah. Hell, nah, nah, to the nah, nah. Hell to the nah, nah. To the nah, 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 nah. Hell to the nah, nah, to the nah, nah.
Yes, we're going to have to say hell to the nah quite a bit in the next couple of months. One thing that's good is there's finally some talk about independence in America and independent candidates. But many of them only recently and opportunistically started calling themselves independents. And we've been exploring this stuff for years on this podcast and challenging No Labels, the Forward Party, and many others. And last week, we learned that Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman had passed away. And I found Joe Lieberman to be an honest, earnest, and patriotic man. We didn't agree on everything, but he was always very kind and thoughtful and joined us here on this show back in July to talk about his latest project, No Labels. And there was an article last week in the New York Times that noted that No Labels has no candidate. They've been trying to find a candidate to take on Trump and Biden and create this dual ticket of a Republican and a Democrat who would come together to run under the No Labels banner. But No Labels right now has no candidate. The New York Times has reported that a number of people have said hell to the nah to No Labels, including retired Admiral William McRaven, former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and former Representative Will Hurd of Texas. Former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan of Georgia, a Republican, publicly withdrew his name recently. Other names floated have included Nikki Haley, the former Republican presidential candidate, and General David Petraeus, retired general, former CIA director, and recent guest on this show. General Petraeus said to the press that he had been approached, and he said no. With their flawed strategy, shaky leadership, lack of true independence, and poor transparency, it's no surprise that No Labels is having trouble attracting candidates to run under their flag. And there's always great commentary from many of you on social media. And CherryBomb81 on Twitter reached out to me to share his or her perspective. CherryBomb said, "I'd never join a political party with the lame, unimaginative name like No Labels. Why not choose the Independent Party, which better describes who they want to appeal to? They've started on the wrong foot already for all the reasons you've outlined above." Well, thank you, CherryBomb81. Unlike No Labels, your name kind of sticks. But yes, CherryBomb, you're right. One of the deeply flawed elements of No Labels is the brand. The branding is beyond weak and confusing, and their content, if you check it out online, has a uniquely public access TV-type feel. The independent movement is definitely a work in progress, and it's often broken and often dominated too much by opportunists and old-timers and small-timers and by people like No Labels, who are giving us all a bad name. That's why they're one of many this season that we're saying hell to the nah to.
Hell to the nah, to the nah, 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 nah.
It's hell to the nah season, but it's also still presidential primary season. You may not have noticed, but this week there were four presidential primaries, including here in New York. Now, and most people didn't vote in it, but 50% of us who are independents couldn't vote in it. We're a majority in America. There are over 3 million of us here in New York alone, and we couldn't vote in a taxpayer-funded election. It was an election funded by our tax dollars that took place in my kids' public school. My kids and the entire school couldn't go to gym class yesterday because Democrats and Republicans only were voting in their gym. their father couldn't go into the gym and vote that day. I'm a combat vet. I'm a 9/11 first responder, and I can't vote in the primary for president of the United States in my neighborhood that's funded by my tax dollars. That's because the closed and hyperpartisan system is broken and disenfranchising tens of millions of independent Americans, like me, and like millions of you. We've covered it on this show for years now. It's undemocratic, and it's un-American. We shouldn't have to pick a party to pick our president. Help us drive the change we need to improve our democracy and give equal voting rights to all Americans. Demand open primaries everywhere. And if you don't get one, you know what to say. Hell to the no.
Hell to the no. To the no, 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 no. Hell no, no. To the no, no. Hell to the no, no. To the no, 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 no. Hell to the no, no.
Now, I warned you that this was going to be a weird and high-profile year for independents, and the hits just keep on coming. There's a new, disgraced, partisan political cast-off with nowhere to go who now wants to opportunistically call himself an independent. Oh yeah, you can't make this up, folks. Guess who it is? George Santos. Hell to the no.
Hell to the no. To the no, 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 no.
George Santos took to social media to post this announcement with warning lights on both sides of it. After today's embarrassing showing in the House, I have reflected and decided that I can no longer be a part of the Republican Party. The Republican Party continues to lie and swindle its voter base. I, in good conscience, cannot affiliate myself with a party that stands for nothing and falls for everything. I'm officially suspending my petitioning in New York 1 to access the ballot as a Republican, and I will be filing to run as an independent. I'll take my ultra-MAGA Trump-supporting values to the ballot in November as an independent. Nick LaLota and John Avalon, I'll see you boys in December, with a kissy smiley face, and God bless the USA. Oh, hell to the no.
Hell to the no. To the no, 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 no. Hell no, no. To the no, no. Hell to the no, no. To the no, 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 no. Hell to the no, no.
And it is definitely a wild and weird, silly season for independence. And that always is going to include the evolving and emerging and disintegrating campaign of Robert F. Kennedy, who I think continues to take more votes from Trump than from Biden, mainly because of his radical anti-vax stance. Now, as Kennedy prepared to announce his VP candidate, we were all prepared to be disappointed and underwhelmed. And we were. As expected, the newly self-proclaimed independent Kennedy announced Nicole Shanahan as his running mate. Some independents are buying this charade, but most of us are not. We know that he's not raising any money, so he got a Google founder's ex-wife who has billions of dollars to run as his running mate and fund his campaign. And most of us will not vote for this unqualified and corrupt ticket. An independent ticket made of two people who were Democrats just last year, and Shanahan, who was a Democrat like 2 weeks ago. Yes, RFK Jr. will continue to get some support. And all he needs is a couple thousand votes of support in one swing state to tip the tide of the election. But overall, most independents have looked under the hood, have examined his record, have listened to him speak, and have said very clearly, hell to the no.
Hell to the no. To the no, 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 no. Hell no, no. To the no, no. Hell to the no, no.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, former Governor Jesse Ventura was rumored as a possible running mate for RFK Jr. alongside Aaron Rodgers, the injured quarterback for the Jets, and a variety of other people. But decades ago, Jesse Ventura was a laughingstock until he was a serious independent voice and ultimately a governor in Minnesota. In many ways, Jesse captured the spirit of the independent movement and had some of the skills that we haven't really seen in a candidate on the independent spectrum lately. 20 years ago, when I founded Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, I wanted to try to get to Jesse Ventura and meet him. He was one of the only publicly independent politicians out there, and he happened to be a veteran. And I met a man named Bill Hilsman.
You care what they know. Your first name is free. Last name is dumb. But you still believe in where we're from. Man's
right flower. Bill Hilsman is what I would call a godfather of the independent movement. He's masterminded some of the most effective and innovative election campaigns in recent years. Bill Hilsman first rocked the political world when he helped elect the late Minnesota Senator Paul Wellstone in 1990 in one of the biggest political upsets in decades. He later shocked everyone, helping Jesse Ventura become governor in 1998. He later joined Ralph Nader during his 2000 campaign. And his inventive campaign, created on a very tiny budget, had the whole country talking and rethinking how we sell our politicians. Bill's always said that our current party-dominated political system works very well for everyone, except two groups, candidates and voters. His goal is not just to revolutionize political campaigns, but to end party politics as we know it. He believes that the days of the two-party political industry are gone, and it's just a matter of time before a third-party president is elected. Bill Hilsman's been around so many folks, ranging from Colin Powell and Ross Perot to Jesse Ventura, Ralph Nader, Donald Trump, and Warren Beatty. He wrote a great book called Run the Other Way, Fixing the Two-Party System, One Candidate at a Time.
And yes, man, I'm made of the same things.
Bill continues to stay in the fight as the CEO and chief creative officer of his own firm, Northwoods Advertising. He's also one of the nicest and most down-to-earth guys you'll meet. And he's got a take on this season, next season, and what is to come in our independent movement. So welcome to a conversation with a man who is truly a godfather of the independent movement. Welcome to a season of Hell to the Gnaw. Welcome to Independent Americans. Episode 275.
Freedom. 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 Freedom.
Independent Americans around the country and around the world. Baseball season is here. Spring is supposed to be here. Playoff basketball and March Madness is here. And the most important political season is here. And I can think of no better guest to bring us forward and help us look back on all things having to do with this thing we've been calling the independent movement than a man I consider a godfather of the independent movement. The great and powerful Bill Hilsman is finally joining us, Independent Americans. Welcome, sir.
Hello. Are we going to talk about baseball? Because I know something about that.
I'd love to talk about that, too. I mean, it's fun that baseball's back, right?
Yes.
What do you think about the pitch clock? Are you a fan of the pitch clock? Or are you not a fan of the pitch clock, Bill?
I don't mind it. I mean, I was on the radio in New York once defending the notion of the designated hitter. So some of these changes are okay with me. But right about the time that they start to do what they should have done in the first place, which was let pitchers develop their ability to hit, you know, Shohei Ohtani shows up and you can do it. You can actually do it. And that's when they decide to make the change to the permanent DH.
Maybe that's a good segue into what we need to kind of change. We need to see in our politics. I called you a godfather of the independent movement because you and I met a long time ago, 20 years ago, when I was running IAVA and I was trying to find a consultant that wasn't partisan. And there weren't too many. Everybody was a Republican or a Democrat, and we were creating a nonpartisan organization. And I found you. You introduced me to Jesse, you know, and you've been, I think, a real mentor and guidepost to me throughout. And I want to get into all of that. I want to get your thoughts on RFK. I want to get your thoughts on reflecting on Jesse's election 25 years later. But let's start with a question I ask everybody, Bill. Where are you and how are you?
I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which because of climate change is now becoming the place everybody wants to move to. And I'm fine.
It was 25 years ago this year, right, that your home state of Minnesota elected Jesse Ventura as the independent governor, upset the political world. I think it was 25 years ago, right?
25 years ago last year.
Right, right. Thank you. And I remember seeing a line where he said, you know, I got paid more in my first year than it cost me to run the campaign. But it was such a seismic moment 25 years ago. And now with this emergence of independent candidates and independent outrage and this opportunity that exists in America, I thought it was important for us to look back. You know, you were instrumental in that campaign and that moment. Can you tell us, you know, 25 years later, looking back on that, what's most important about that moment? And what does it tell us about maybe our politics today?
Well, I don't know if it ended up being a good thing, but what we actually tried to do in the Jesse race was introduce chaos to politics. And, you know, if you're a long shot candidate, it tends to work to your advantage to do that. I think things may have been taken to the extreme since then. So I'm not so sure that was a great idea. But remember, Back in those days, around 1998, 2000, all sorts of outsiders were looking at running. Schwarzenegger, Warren Beatty was talking about running for president. Trump was talking about running for president, and actually came out to Minnesota to talk to Jesse and some other people. But it turned out he was mostly interested in trying to do a book tour. So this notion that chaos has descended upon the system, we thought it might have been a good thing back then. Now it seems to have gotten out of control. Chaos is no longer under control.
Yeah, chaos is everywhere, right? Chaos is our normal. How did Jesse pull it off? You know, I don't know. Maybe you can share with us when this idea first started to germinate and how it came to be. But how did he pull it off? How did he upset the system? How did he introduce chaos? What is it about him, that campaign, and maybe that time that was so unique?
I don't think the times have necessarily changed that much. I mean, we always knew that there was a huge contingent of self-identified independent voters out there just because they didn't like the choices they were being offered. And I think the only big change since then is that the Washington establishment is now more willing to accept that there actually are self-identified independent voters and that they are really a plurality these days. I'd say they're 40, maybe even 42% of the electorate these days. So the opportunity was kind of there. When a voter doesn't like either of their choices, I mean, we get, 4,000 different choices of sparkling water, but we only get to pick between two people for president? That seems very odd. So the opportunity was there, and in that particular race, nobody really liked the other two candidates. Everybody was looking for a fresh face. And it wasn't until I went to the I was actually working for a Democrat in the Democratic primary. And that was the famous primary that had Hubert Humphrey's kid in it, Orville Freeman's kid in it, Walter Mondale's kid in it, Mark Dayton, who was a multi-billionaire in it, and my candidate. And when we went to the state fair, we saw all these crowds following Jesse, and it just seemed to me that something was up. The other thing that the candidates did were they invited Jesse onto the stage. So you had Jesse up there being able to speak to Democrats, to speak to Republicans, while they're looking at all these various candidates and finding none of them to their liking. So it just seemed to me there was something in the air and there was something in the water and there was a big opportunity. And we took it.
And you had a really dynamic horse to ride, right? Like Jesse, the master of one-liners, Navy SEAL, public profile, comfortable in public, you know, kind of a tough guy image, somebody that had high name recognition. Is there also a bit of a formula there when people are now talking about, you know, a Matthew McConaughey running in Texas or a Mark Cuban or even somebody like The Rock? Is there an opportunity, especially among independents? We've also talked about people like Admiral McRaven and Colin Powell that have this kind of like military superhero look. But Jesse was like a real life action hero. Is there a special power in picking a person or having a person like that as the candidate that can allow you to punch above your weight class?
Well, I think anybody who's got that interesting a background is immediately somebody that's going to attract attention. And he was a bit larger than life. Well, he was way larger than political life. Let's put it that way. And that made him unique. But the other thing that made him unique was he was on talk radio for a long time. He was on a sports talk show. And one of the very best training grounds, I think, for potential candidates is talk radio. Because you have to engage with the public, you have to sharpen your wits and be able to go toe-to-toe with people on issues and positions and things like that. So he had that advantage working for him, too.
I think that's really important, Bill. I think you're right. Having hosted a talk radio show and done this job, I mean, it does prepare you for the unexpected and teaches you how to kind of grab the mic and push forward your message and at the same time connect with people. He was magic. I remember he cut a promo for us at IAVA and he walked in the booth. He hit it in one shot and he walked out. And the first time I met him, I think you made the introduction. We met at a truck stop in Minnesota, and he pulled up in the parking lot, and I could hear his motorcycle roll in, and he kicked in the door, kind of sat down. I think he probably had a gun in his waistband. I mean, he was Jesse, right? And he could capture the attention. And I feel like there's a moment now where people want to be that, and instead we've got Jill Stein, we've got Cornel West, we've got RFK Jr., and I want to get your thoughts on all of them, but you're an expert on this independent thing, right? Can you explain, based off your really extensive experience, how do you define an independent, and how would you explain who they are to someone who's trying to better understand them, or us?
Well, I always call them self-identified independents, because there's still resistance in Washington to allow the notion that independent voters exist. And the argument in Washington is the world's worst argument. It's that because they ultimately end up voting for a Democrat or Republican, and your answer to that is, well, those are the only two choices. So they either vote for one of those people or stay home. So I think a self-identified independent voter is basically somebody who thinks for herself or himself. They aren't going to accept what the parties are telling them. They aren't really going to accept what the candidates are telling them, and they aren't going to accept at face value what the news media is telling them. So they're critical thinkers, and I'm afraid we don't have a huge majority of those people anymore in the country. But I think if there's hope out there, the hope is with independent voters, and they are the swing group in every close election. There's just no doubt.
Yes, on all of that, right? And what's so important is I think there are some maybe younger people or people who are newer to politics who maybe, you know, are hearing this for the first time this round, right? And you've been doing this for decades, and that's why I think it's really important to kind of reintroduce you, especially to the younger generation. When you look at this landscape, independents are also kind of defined by their enemy, right? The Democrats or Republicans define them as spoilers, or whack jobs, or people who just want to blow everything up, right? But there's always this kind of, I think, American independent spirit that's kind of a fuck you to the establishment, right? And somebody always catches a part of that. And it feels like in this election, by default, it's RFK Jr., right? I mean, he's capturing the Joe Rogan crowd and the Ross Perot crowd and the libertarian crowd and this always X percentage that just wants none of the above and will take whoever else is up there. But can you evaluate him from your experience as an independent candidate? I've said, for me, it's hard, I think, to trust someone who was a Democrat a couple of months ago. I've also got issues with, you know, his conspiracies around 9/11, the anti-vax stuff. I don't think he's a great horse for us to ride, right? I would much rather have someone else, but he's who's out there and who may define us by default. How do you size up RFK Jr. as an independent and as a candidate?
Well, one of the biggest obstacles for independents is being able to get on the ballot in all the states. And I don't know where he's at on that particular thing. I mean, he's run out of money, which is why he made the vice presidential selection that he made. And that's not good for anybody. He's running off his name, and his family basically is rejecting him. That should tell you enough right there. And I don't know what the goal is. I don't know that. That's the one thing I don't understand about the Kennedy campaign. I don't know what their actual goal is, because I don't think he can win. I don't think independents should vote for him, but that's everybody's individual decision. It's not for me to tell people who to vote for. But the main thing is I don't really understand why he's running and what the purpose of this run is. If it's just to question the establishment, well, we've done that for a long, long time. It didn't really seem to make a whole lot of difference. But it's been done, and I just don't think he's not. If you're a critical thinker, I don't think he's the answer.
I think that's a really good way of putting it, Bill. I mean, if he wasn't a Kennedy and he didn't have Nicole Shanahan's money, he'd be Dean Phillips, right? He'd be like less than 1% across the country. He'd be pretty much irrelevant. But now he's in a place where he does have those things. He does have a base of support. He's going to get on the ballot in Utah now and maybe a couple other places. And I've said I'm not going to vote for him because he is a spoiler. I'm more interested in independents at governor, at mayor, at Congress, even all the way down to school board. But how much do you think he'll get, knowing your understanding of this? You know, Perot had a record level of just around, was it 22% nationally? How much do you think he can get by being this kind of vessel for picking up all the things by default? And I've said, you know, he might be able to move a couple hundred or thousand people in a swing state that could be the difference. Do you see that also?
People who run for president are not shy on ego. You know, Perot wasn't, Bobby Kennedy Jr. isn't. But it's a problem when that becomes the main reason for the campaign. So I think he eventually, what you see with a lot of independents is people entertain the notion of the independent. The independent can draw a lot of press. But when push comes to shove, every election is a choice, really, in this country, pretty much between A and B. And I think it's kind of like buying anything else in this country. You know, you narrow your choices down, and it eventually comes down to, do I want this one or this one? And that's what the Biden campaign is resting their hopes on. And it worked last time. I don't know if it'll work this time. But I don't see Kennedy pulling that much. A lot of things are going to happen in the campaign between now and when we actually sit down and vote. So we can't foresee a whole bunch of things that are going to change the dynamics of this race. But I'd be very surprised if Kennedy ends up with 6%, 7%. I don't think he can break double figures.
Do you think he takes more from Biden or he takes more from Trump, Bill?
I really don't know. I think if I had to just say, and I guess I do because you asked me, I'd say it's fairly equal, because he's got the name, but I don't think that's washing with older Democrats. I mean, if you're an older Democrat, why wouldn't you like Joe Biden? He's an old Democrat. But the conspiracy theories are all basically rooted in things that Trump supporters tend to believe in. So I think if he's going to take from either side. I think my main point is people who are really self-identified independents, they look at that race and they look at it with a critical mind. There's no there there.
I think that's really important because, you know, one of the things that I've been encouraging this movement to do is to look to the people who didn't just get here. I mean, these are people who you know, didn't just become Kansas City Chiefs fans in the last 2 years. I mean, there are people like you. We've had John Updike on. We've had others on that have been in this movement for a long time and have always been independent. So I'm careful about creating a litmus test, but I do think authenticity and experience matter. And you have that. So we've also had Andrew Yang on from Forward. We had Joe Lieberman on, who just passed away from No Labels. Can you take a shot at both of those things? Forward Party with Andrew Yang. Let's start there. Do you think they're going to have the ability or the capacity to really capture a significant number of independents and be a force on this space?
No. I mean, when Yang ran, nobody could understand what the Forward Party is. And I mean, I'm in politics and I don't understand what the Forward Party is. So there's a branding issue there that just is a failure at this point. If he does want to attract independent voters around the notion of a candidacy for him or for the Forward Party, they have to do a much better job of distinguishing themselves and delineating what they're all about. Who else are we talking about?
I love that. And that's not a lot different from what I said to Andrew. And Andrew's a friend and I like Andrew, but he hasn't sold me that Forward is an option for independence. And maybe, you know, he'll be able to create that on a ballot where I have a Republican and a Democrat and a Forward alternative. And it sounds like that might be some of their strategy down ballot. But, you know, Andrew's also spent the last couple of months advocating for Dean Phillips as a Democrat. So there's this confusion around what Forward is. And then we've got No Labels, this kind of secretive black box organization. I had Joe Lieberman on here. I had Christy Todd Whitman on here. They said they were going to have a candidate in March or April. It sounds like they've offered it to a lot of people and they've said no. They do have ballot access in, I think, 13 or more states. Do you have a thought or reaction to them as a player on this landscape?
Well, ballot access in 13 or 14 states does not get you really anywhere. I don't know what No Labels is trying to do. Again, it goes back to what's the goal of any given campaign. I don't know what it is they're trying to do. With Yang, you can look at something that approximates a reform party type of thing from the 1990s. So there's a little bit of a potential pattern there, although I don't think they've branded themselves very well. With No Labels, it's more like no understanding. I mean, nobody knows what it is that they're really trying to do. And if you say to me as a political consultant, well, people are really mad at Democrats and Republicans, and that's why the independent vote has grown so large. So our idea is let's put on the ticket a special compromise ticket that has a Democrat and a Republican on it. That's just dumb. I mean, you'd be much better off running an independent campaign with an independent candidate than you would be doing some type of melded ticket between, you know, then instead of just having one person that people don't like, you have two people that people don't like. It's just dumb.
This is why I love talking to you, Bill, and why you need to come on the show more often, because your takes are always a bullseye. And you've been doing it for so long, you know how to communicate to people because it comes from the gut. And I think that's kind of what's often misunderstood, is that a lot of this comes from the gut. I had a conversation with somebody yesterday, and they said, you know, what makes a real independent? And I said, you kind of know it when you see it. It's like the old Supreme Court definition of pornography, right? Like, you know one when you see it. Like, if you're a Yankee fan, you know a real Yankee fan. You can tell as soon as they start talking if they're really one of you or if they got a free ticket from their uncle to show up for the game. And I think that we're in a moment like that, too, where Democrats and Republicans in particular are fearful of independence, are guarding their base. But we also see young people, we see veterans, we see so many other demographics choosing not to register as a Democrat and Republican. So when you look across the landscape, Bill, we're going to have Yemi Mobolati, the mayor of Colorado Springs, back on here, a guy who is important not only because of what he says and what he stands for, but because he won, right? Like, I think that's important. Who do you see as the next generation of independent candidates that will define what an independent is for this new generation?
I can't think of anybody off the top of my head, and that's a little bit worrisome, but it's also based in history. I mean, what you constantly get are people that say that they're independents and try to make a reputation as an independent, but then they end up running as a Democrat or a Republican. So the system is basically co-opting them. And their rationale is, well, I just can't get elected as an independent. And, you know, that's their decision to make. But that's really what tends to happen is they become an offshoot of some arm of one of the major parties. And depending on the election, the dynamics of that election and what type of seat they're trying to win, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. But you just, there are so many obstacles put in the way intentionally by the two parties for independent candidates that it's very difficult to run as an independent. I think you're a hero if you run for office. I think you're a real hero if you run for office as an independent. The challenges are just incredible. And they're not going to get any better. As Jesse used to say, it's like two street gangs, you know, it's the Crips and the Bloods, and they're trying to defend their turf and their money.
I think that's right. And in the meantime, you know, the country's on fire and we're not seeing people who are pragmatic or who are above the parties. But I want to get to that structural piece too, Bill, because you and I have talked about this, you know, in personal conversations. We've explored it on this show. You know, I've long said, I think we need a combination of leaders who can transform this landscape and define what independents are, but we also need some key structural changes. And one of the things that we've explored a lot is open primaries. Yesterday in New York, we had the presidential primary here. I couldn't vote. You know, 3 million New Yorkers couldn't vote for their president because we're independent. Yet the election was publicly funded, publicly staffed. They used the school. They kicked my kid out of gym yesterday so they could run a partisan election in his school. How do you rank open primaries as a priority on that structural change that's needed? And are there other things that if you were king for a day, you would change to better empower independents?
Well, I think open primaries are good in theory. They don't always work that well in practice. And again, state laws vary from state to state, and the two established parties are great at putting obstacles in front of people. But I know a lot of independents that just, they figure out which party primary they want to vote in. They'll switch their party registration to that. They'll vote in the thing and then switch back before the general election. There's nothing wrong with doing that. I don't think you should allow the system to keep you from voting for a candidate that you want to vote for. It's just, it's a little harder for independents. It's takes more work.
Bill, when you meet young people, you know, if you meet your, you know, if you're going to talk to yourself 25 years ago and the young people working on Jesse's staff or someone who's thinking about running as an independent, you do this, you're a political consultant and you give people great strategic advice. If someone's thinking about running as an independent or jumping in as an independent, what counsel would you give them?
Well, the problem in most cases is money. Now, there is a way to do this from the ground up. The biggest problem an independent movement has is recognizing other independents and bringing them together. Because, again, by definition, if you're an independent, you don't really want to belong to an organization or a party or a club. But there's 42% of the electorate out there that feel alike about these things, and that are looking for better answers and that are looking for better candidates. I think the key to unlock this is some sort of gathering place, or I hesitate to call it a political party because I don't think it needs to be one. But some way where these people can get together. I'd like it to be something where the information is from an independent standpoint. It's basically reading between the lines of what the news media is reporting, what the candidates are saying, et cetera, et cetera. It's sort of a referee, somebody who's playing it down the middle and will give people the actual factual information, assuming that they're interested in factual information, and most independents are. And then people can make informed choices on the basis of that. People are doing that. People are absolutely doing that independently. The question is, can you put together some type of organizing group or principle that can let these people meet each other and exchange ideas and act in that way. But if you said to me, who's out there right now that could run and do this? I don't know. You know, we can talk about The Rock. I think The Rock could get elected president. But, you know, that's almost Jesse on steroids. And that might be just a little too much for people.
Or it might be Jesse 2.0, right? Like, I think I can't imagine how many people dismissed, you know, Jesse the Body Ventura 25 years ago. And now, you know, I think a couple of years ago, people were dismissing The Rock. Now maybe they're less dismissive of The Rock, you know, when they see him actually announcing it, like hypothetically, then they're going to be even less dismissive of him. I think that the prototype of him is a force to be reckoned with. And even the Republicans, I think, have been smart about this, maybe more so than the Democrats, when they run somebody like a Tommy Tuberville, right, who's a very popular coach in a home state. Now the Democrats are running Colin Affery. They're like, okay, let's find a former football player who everybody knows. Let's run him in Texas. He kind of doesn't sound like a Democrat. You know, I think they're taking smaller shots at this, but I really do feel like we're one big move away from that next generation of Jesse that can kind of bust it open and encourage other people to follow their lead. Can I ask you, Bill, you know, two final questions. One, I want to ask you, when you look at the landscape now, Biden versus Trump, understanding the potential for all these things, no labels, Kennedy, Stein, Cornell West, maybe somebody else, to be spoilers or to shave off pieces, how do you see the Biden versus Trump matchup ending up?
Well, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows, and I think it's a little bit just crazy to even try to speculate on it. There are just so many things that change elections, and there will be some earth-shaking moments before November shows up. So I don't know. I can tell you that the Trump people are much more better prepared than last time in running as well than when he ran against Hillary, because they were all shocked when he won. Nobody expected to win, least of all him. And we suffered the consequences of that with his administration. They're much better prepared. They're running a much better campaign this time. Personally, I think it's more dangerous this time if they were to win. The Biden campaign is a little locked in the past. It's not the most contemporary of campaigns, and I don't know if they seem confident in this notion that we were talking about before. When it finally comes down to a choice, are you going to push this button for that guy, or are you going to push this button for this guy? They were right the last time. I mean, Donald Trump's out there saying he had to have won because he got more votes than anybody in the history of the presidency. Well, Joe Biden got more votes than that. So I don't know. Maybe we're all fools to be this worried, and the Biden campaign knows exactly what they're doing. But I think there's a lot of room for improvement there, especially among independent voters, progressives. There's all sorts of areas where Biden could do a lot better.
They would be smart to pull you in and put you in the war room and get your counsel on all these things, Bill. If you can, I'd love for you to stick around for a couple of extra bonus questions for our Patreon members. I'm going to give Bill the car question and a couple other ones, folks, that we haven't had in a while. Bill is going to stick around. But a final question, we need a little levity here. And this is a question I've been waiting to ask you. Now, we've talked about Democrats and Republicans, an old question from this show that divided all Americans, but you had to choose one. There was no third party option. Bill Hilsman, if you had to choose one, would it be pancakes or waffles?
Pancakes, if they're from my favorite pancake house.
Where is that, Bill? I got to hear. Where is that?
Well, there's a couple of them. One's in the Chicago suburbs, and one's in the Minneapolis suburbs. But there's some variation on the name Original Pancake House.
And why pancakes over waffles, Bill?
Well, the only place I know where people go and get a lot of waffles is Waffle House. And if you've ever been to a Waffle House as opposed to the Original Pancake House, you know why you'd pick pancakes.
There you go. You know it when you see it. Bill, I'm so grateful for your time, for your mentorship, for your support for me, and especially in those early days when no one would take my phone call. And you've always been there for me and for the veterans movement and for so many other people in good causes. It's been a real honor to have you on the show finally, and I hope you'll come back again soon, my friend.
I will, and thanks to all the veterans. They deserve good things to happen.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate you. Stay vigilant, sir, and enjoy the pancakes out there. The helpers are out there, and the elders are out there, people with wisdom who've been here before and can see where we're going. And Bill Hilsman is one of those guys. Be sure to check out his book, Run the Other Way, and keep an eye out for his ads this season, and maybe in support of a presidential campaign in the years to come. Bill Hilsman is a man who cares deeply about his country and is driving our movement forward, and he's definitely a helper.
Always look for the helpers. There will always be helpers, you know, even just on the sidelines. If you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Look for the helpers. They're definitely out there. I talked about Governor Wes Moore and so many others that have been guests on this show. If you've never done it before, please go to independentamericans.us and check out our helpers, our Patreon community, and consider being one of them. For just $5 a month, you can help fuel this movement and keep this kind of content and positivity coming. You can also check out gear, including the Independent Americans I shirt that I have on in my conversation with Bill Hilsman. And you can check out YouTube videos of my conversation with Bill and all the others. And while you're at it, please be sure to follow us on all social media platforms and subscribe wherever you're listening to right now. I'll wait. Go ahead. Just hit the button. Come on. Do it. Excellent. Thank you. And be sure to check me out every Wednesday at 3 o'clock on News Nation with Colin McShane. He started to call me Mr. Independent. And every week, we're going to break down the latest in independent politics and national security. Check it out. And you can also find all the clips on our YouTube page and on social media. Yeah, it's hell to the gnaw season. But it's also March Madness season. And if you haven't been watching, it's been pretty damn exciting. The underdogs have been upsetting. Number 14, Oakland, beat number 3, Kentucky. Sorry, Chris. And number 11, NC State is in the Final Four. And more importantly, people are coming together. That's why we love March Madness, because it's a special time that brings people together in conversation and debate and fun all across the country. And the women's tournament has been just as good. If you haven't seen Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and Paige Buchers play, you are missing out. Because it is a very fun season to be watching basketball. It was also Easter season, and I didn't mention it, but I wanted to go back and give a special shout out to all our friends and remind you that it was Peeps season. I almost forgot, quite frankly, but we used to give out Peeps and ask a Peeps question in every episode, and when I went to CVS to get my kids some stuff for their Easter basket, I was blown away. There was party cake Peeps and cotton candy Peeps and lime Peeps and cherry Peeps and bubblegum Peeps, a whole aisle of just Peeps. It was amazing. It is definitely Peeps season, and it is baseball season. You guys know the Yanks are always my team, and this Friday I'll be going to the home opener, but the Mets are always number 2. And for my brother-in-law MJ's birthday, we went to the Mets game last Saturday. And it was a special day because my kids got to go with their uncle and me and their mom, but because we had a day at the ballpark, which is actually another example of a unifying positive thing that's happening in this country right now. And if you need more evidence that the helpers are out there, in about the 4th inning, I got up to go get Cracker Jacks with my little guy River, and while I was gone, a foul ball landed next to my seat, and my 8-year-old got it. Now, he didn't get it outright. It actually bounced and hit his uncle in the leg and went under the seat, and a really nice kid from New Zealand picked it up and gave it to my kid, giving him a memory for the rest of his life and showing how you can be a helper in a small way. Yeah, Ryder got his first foul ball, and
I've never gotten a foul ball in my whole life, but it was a memory that was possible because another kid showed him an act of kindness. Yeah, it's hell to the NOS season, and it's campaign season, and it's always combat season somewhere. But it's also spring. It's a time of renewal, rebirth, happiness, and positivity. And it's a time for helpers and for kindness. They're out there. Keep looking for them, keep promoting them, and keep trying to be one. Because America's more divided than ever, but we at Independent Americans and Righteous Media, we're working to change that, adding light to contrast the heat. And if you're among the 50% of Americans who are independents, this is your show. I've been telling you for years, but now you're seeing it come together. And if you're a Republican or a Democrat and you're not a diehard, this is also your show. If you're someone who cares about your country and the future of the world, this is your show. All are welcome. And I invite you to join us and be a part of the solution. Our independent movement is the hope for the future. Country over party, people over politics, light over heat. Busting up the status quo and fueling a new movement that spans all across our society. Our movement is growing, people. And I hope you enjoyed this episode with Bill Hilsman. If you did, please share it far and wide and invite others to declare their independence. And stay vigilant, my friend, because eternal vigilance is the price of freedom. And know that you are not alone in your vigilance. We're all vigilant, and we're all in this together. Every season is independent season. I'm your host, Paul Rykoff. Thank you for listening this season and every season. Down with Hamas. Down with Putin. Slava Ukraine. And stay vigilant, America. And go Yanks!
Media.